at the water. I sneak a peek at him, and my heart does that irritating flip it always does when Reed is around. He's masculinity personified, tall and broad, his gorgeous features chiseled to perfection. My mouth grows dry as I admire his arms, sleek with muscle, rippling with power. He's a good foot taller than me, so when he finally turns to look at me, I have to tilt my head to meet his gaze. Those blue eyes flick over me, resting briefly on my tiny denim shorts and tight halter top that ties at the neck. They focus on my navy blue and white deck shoes, and the corner of his mouth quirks slightly. I wonder if he's about to make fun of my shoes, but his almost smile fades when a husky moan echoes from above us. Yes! Brooke's throaty voice makes Reed and me cringe. A male growl follows the request. Callum apparently has no problem getting busy when his sons are close by. I find that disgusting, yet, at the same time, I can't bring myself to hate him, not after his confession that he's still grieving for his wife. Loss makes us do crazy things. Reed bites out a curse.
Let's go.
His steel grip captures my arm, making it impossible to do anything but follow him toward the stairs that lead below deck. Where are we going? He doesn't answer. He pushes open the door and marches into the luxurious main room, which is furnished with leather couches and glass tables. Reed bulldozes past the full kitchen and dining area toward the cabins in the back. He knocks on an oak door.
East, wake the fuck up.
There's a loud groan.
Go away. My head is pounding.
Reed walks into the cabin without knocking. I peek behind his broad shoulders and see Easton sprawled on a massive bed, holding a pillow over his head.
Get up,
Reed orders.
Why? Need you to keep Dad occupied.
Reed laughs sardonically.
Well, he's occupied enough at the moment, but I want you up there in case that changes.
Easton pushes the pillow off his face and sits up with a groan.
You know I've always got your back, but listening to that woman is my idea of a nightmare. Those squeaky noises she makes when Dad...
He stops mid-sentence when he notices me behind Reed. I can't see Reed's face, but whatever his eyes are conveying causes Easton to heave himself out of bed.
Gotcha. Keep the twins away, too,
Reed says. His brother disappears without another word. Rather than stay in Easton's cabin, Reed walks next door and gestures for me to follow him inside. I stay put, crossing my arms.
What do you want? To talk.
Then talk here.
Get in here, Ella.
No.
Yes.
I drop my arms and walk into the cabin. Something about this guy. He issues a command and I obey. I fight it at first, sure. I always fight. But he always wins. Reed closes the door behind me and runs a hand through his wind-blown hair.
I've been thinking about what we talked about before.
We didn't talk before.
You talked.
And my pulse speeds up. Because now I'm remembering what he'd said.
If I have to fuck you so you don't ruin my family, I'll do it. I want you to stay away from my brother.
Aw, are you jealous?
As Callum would say, I'm poking the tiger, but I don't really care. I'm tired of this guy telling me what to do. I get it. You're used to a certain lifestyle,
Reed says, ignoring my taunt.
I bet guys were lining up to drill you at your old school.
My heart stops when he grabs the bottom of his shirt.
You have needs,
he shrugs.
Can't fault you for that. And yeah, I haven't made it easy for you to make friends at Astor Park. Not a lot of guys have the balls to go against me and ask you out. They think you're hot, though. They all do.
Where on earth is he going with this? And why, oh my God, why is he taking off his shirt? I gape at his bare chest. He has a six-pack that makes me drool, and his oblique muscles are tight and delicious. Heat spreads through my body. I clench my thighs together to try to stop the throbbing between them, but it just makes it worse.
He grins at me. Oh yeah, he's fully aware of the effect he has on me. My brother's a good lay. His eyes gleam. But he's not as good as me.
Reed undoes the button of his cargo shorts and tugs on the zipper. I can't breathe. I'm frozen in place as he yanks the shorts off and kicks them away. My legs start to shake. Everywhere I look, I see smooth golden skin and tight muscle.
Here's the deal, he says. My brother and father are off limits to you. If you have an itch that needs scratching, you come to me. I'll take care of it.
He rests his large palm between his pecs, then drags it lower. All the oxygen is trapped in my lungs. I can't do anything but follow the trajectory of his hand. It slides over his abs and stomach, stops just above his groin, then shifts lower to delve past the elastic of his boxer briefs. Reed's fingers close around his very obvious hard-on, and someone moans. I think it's me. It must be me, because he smiles.
You want this? He pumps himself slowly. You can have it. Lick it, suck it, fuck it, anything you want, baby. As long as it's just with me.
My heart beats even faster. Reed tips his head.
Do we have a deal?
It's the calculated note in his voice that snaps me out of my trance. Horror and indignation rush to the surface, and I stumble backward, bumping my shins on the bed.
Screw you, I choke out.
He looks unimpressed with my outburst. I lick my lips. My mouth is drier than the Sahara, and yet I've never felt more alive. All my stripping, all my dodging of Mom's handsy boyfriends hasn't prepared me for this. Maybe there were guys lined up to sleep with me, but I was focused on working, caring for my mom, and then just surviving. I can't even remember the face of a single guy I went to school with last year. The image of Reed standing here, buff, golden, and naked with his dick in his hand, will be burned into my memory forever. He has everything a girl could want. The hard body, the handsome face that will still look good years from now, the money, and that extra something. Charisma, I guess. The ability to slay you with a single look. The apple is dangling in front of me, juicy red and delicious, but like the fairy tale, Reed Royal is the villain, disguised as a pretty prince. Taking a bite out of him would be a huge mistake. And I might be attracted to him, but I refuse to let my first time be with someone who despises me, someone who's trying to protect his perfectly capable brother from my innocent destruction. But I don't want to leave without a taste either, because I'm not that strong or stupid. He may hate me, but he wants me. His grip on his dick doesn't ease up. If anything, his muscles bunch harder, as if he's anticipating my touch. This is what Valerie was talking about the other night, when we were dancing. I didn't respond to the crowd, but Reed's hot eyes tracking my every move made me feel real. I know that if I was in Reed's head right now, all I'd see would be me. I saunter to the chair in the corner, where a folded robe is wrapped in its sash. I pull the sash off, and then run the strip of terry cloth through my fingers. Anything I want? I ask him. His eyes close momentarily, and then snap open with so much need my knees nearly buckle. Yes, anything. His response sounds as if it's wrenched out of him. But just me.
Why are you so desperate? I taunt. You had sex with someone just last night.
He makes a disgusted sound in the back of his throat.
I didn't have Jack last night. You're the one who made out with East.
And you weren't rocking the Range Rover so hard the tires were coming off? I say sarcastically.
That was Wade.
My confusion must show because he clarifies.
The quarterback of Astor Park, friend of mine. The bathroom was full. He couldn't wait.
Something like relief floods me. Maybe this is the only way his pride lets us be together. Maybe I could have him. Maybe
This is my good thing, my reward. I decide to test it. I want to tie you up. His jaw hardens. He probably thinks that this is my kink, something I've tried out a dozen times before. Sure, babe. Anything you want. He's not giving in. He's baiting me. I kick myself for believing for a single moment that I'm anything more to Reed than a convenient warm body. I approach him with growing resolve. This is nice, isn't it? He watches me warily as I gesture for him to hold out his wrists. And for all my pretend nonchalance, I can barely stifle a gasp when his hand brushes against my bare midriff. Note to self, wear more clothes around Reed for my own self-preservation. I'm not a Boy Scout or sailor. I know one knot, the shoelace one. I wrap his wrists twice, and we both suck in a breath when the sash strikes the front of his boxers not once, but twice. You're killing me, he says between gritted teeth. Good, I murmur. But my hands are shaking so hard I can barely get my simple knots tied. You like this? Me at your mercy? We both know that you're never at my mercy. He mutters something under his breath about me not knowing shit, but I ignore him. I look around for a place to tie him to. The great thing about boats is that everything is bolted down. There's a shiny brass loop next to the chair, and I lead Reed over to it. Pushing him down in the chair, I kneel between his legs, with the sash in my hands. He sits there like a god, a modern-day King Tut, surveying the slave girl at his feet. The throbbing between my legs is almost painful. All I can hear is a tiny devilish voice asking me what the harm would be. This guy wants me so bad that he hasn't lost an inch of his erection. Under the cotton, it's waiting for me to touch it, just like he'd ordered or begged. I've never had my mouth around a dick before. I wonder what it feels like. Before I can stop myself, I reach out and tug his boxers down far enough to free him. He hisses when I touch him. Oh, wow. The softness surprises me. His skin is like velvet. You're perfect, I want to say, but I'm afraid he'll make fun of me if I do. I run my fingertips over him and take a deep breath. Need pulses in my blood. Is this what you want? Reed asks. It's supposed to be a taunt, but comes out as a plea. I stare at his hard-on, intimidated by it. There's a pearl of liquid on the top, and I lick it. But one taste isn't enough. I go back for seconds, lapping the tip like it's the hottest day in July, and he's an ice cream cone about to melt all over my fingers. God damn it. His fisted hands come to rest on the top of my head. Suck it. Damn it. Suck it like I know you can. His cruel words break through the fog of desire. I rear back. Like you know I can? My defenses are so low that the vulnerability I've tried to keep from him seeps out. Like you... He falters for a moment, unsettled by the hurt in my voice, but something causes him to rally. Like you've done 1,000 times before. Right. I release a shaky laugh. Then you need to be secured for this. Because I know tricks you haven't ever dreamed of. I pull hard on the sash and tie it to the ring in the floor. I tie it tight. He watches me with glittering eyes. I want to punch him, really make him hurt. But he can endure physical pain, so the only thing I can do is make him believe that I'm going to ruin his precious family in ways that can't be rebuilt. Like the way he's breaking me apart. Into so many tiny pieces. I climb onto the chair, my knees on either side of his strong thighs. I know you want me. I know that you're dying for me to get back on my knees. Curling my fingernails into his scalp, I jerk his head back so he can see my eyes. But it will be a cold, cold day in hell before you ever see me kneel again. I wouldn't touch you if you paid me. I wouldn't touch you again, even if you begged me for it, even if you vowed you loved me more than the sun loves the day or the moon loves the night. I'd screw your father before I'd screw you. I push him away and climb off. You know what? Maybe I'll go do that right now. I remember Easton saying your dad likes them young. I saunter to the door with confidence I don't really feel. Reed jerks against his bonds, but my simple knots hold him tight.
Get back here and untie me,
he growls. Nah, you're gonna have to figure that one out yourself. I step to the door and place my hand on the knob. Turning back, I plant a hand on my hip and taunt. If you're better than Easton, then by way of experience, your dad has to be spectacular.
Ella, get your ass back here.
No. I smile at him and leave. Behind me, I hear him yelling my name. The sound gets fainter and fainter until his voice is just a bad, lingering memory. On the deck, Callum is tossing back booze while Easton is sleeping next to him in a lounger.
Ella, are you okay?
Callum hurriedly gets to his feet and comes over. I smooth down my hair and pretend to be unfazed. I'm fine. Actually, I was just thinking about Steve, and, well, I'd like to know more about him, if you're willing to share. Callum's whole face lights up.
Yes, definitely. Come over and sit down.
I bite my lip and look at my feet. Could we go somewhere private?
Of course. How about my stateroom?
That would be perfect, I beam. His mouth drops open slightly. God, that smile is all Steve. Come on. He drapes an arm around my shoulder.
Steve and I grew up together. His granddad, who formed Atlantic Aviation with my granddad, was a sailor. Steve and I would sit and listen to his pawpaw's stories for hours. I guess that's where we got the urge to enlist.
Easton's head pops up as Callum leads me toward the stateroom. He stares at me, then at Callum's arm. I brace myself for a snotty comment, one that I probably deserve this time. Instead, he looks like I kicked him in the stomach, or lied to him, which is almost worse. I let Callum rattle on about good old Steve for about 10 minutes before I interrupt him. Callum, this is interesting, and I appreciate you sharing with me, but I hesitate. I have to ask you a question that's been bothering me from the moment I stepped foot in your house.
Sure, Ella. You can ask me anything.
Why are your sons so unhappy? I think of Reed's perpetually sullen face and swallow hard. Why are they so angry? We both know they don't like me, and I want to know why.
Callum scrubs a hand down his face. You just have to give it some time. They'll come around.
I fold my legs up underneath me on the bed. There's only one chair in the stateroom, so Callum sat on it while I took the bed. It's awkward to be in here, sitting on a mattress while talking to my new father figure about my newly discovered but deceased father. You said that before, but I don't think they will, I say quietly. And I don't get it. I mean, is it the money? Do they really resent you giving me money?
It's not the money. It's... shit.
I mean, shoot.
Callum stumbles over his words. God, I need a drink.
He laughs a little.
But I'd bet you wouldn't let me have one.
Not now. I cross my arms. Callum wants me to be tough with him. I can do that.
Straight up no shit. That's how you want it, right?
I have to smile. Right. He tilts his head back to stare at the ceiling.
At this point, my relationship with the boys is so broken I could bring Mother Teresa home and they'd accuse her of trying to get in my pants. They think I cheated on their mother and caused her death.
I make an effort to keep my jaw closed. Okay, wow, well, that explains some of it. I take a breath. And did you?
No. I never cheated on her. I was never even tempted, not once during our marriage. When I was young, Steve and I ran a little wild, but once I married Maria, I never looked at another woman.
He sounds sincere, but I feel like I'm not getting the whole story. Then why are your kids always in a foul mood?
Steve was...
Callum looks away.
Hell, Ella, I wanted time for you to learn to love your father, not tell you all the crappy things that he did because he was lonely.
I grasp at every straw I can in order to force Callum to spill whatever it is he's trying so hard to hide. Look, I'm not trying to be mean,
But I don't know Steve, and now that he's gone, I won't ever know him. He's not a real person to me, not like Reed or Easton or you. You want me to be a royal, but I'm never going to be one if everyone in the family doesn't accept me. Why would I ever come back after graduation to a place where I don't feel wanted?
My attempts at emotional blackmail are a success. Callum instantly starts speaking, and I'm genuinely touched at how badly he wants me to be part of his family.
Steve was a bachelor for a long time. He liked to brag a lot, and I think when the boys were younger, they thought their Uncle Steve was the epitome of manhood. He'd tell them stories of our wilder days, and I never stopped him. We spent a lot of time jetting around on business trips, and Steve took advantage of that. I promise you I didn't, but not everyone believed that.
Like his kids, like his wife. He shifts in his chair, obviously uncomfortable with this story.
Maria became depressed, and I didn't recognize the signs. Looking back, I realized that her distance and moodiness were symptoms of a serious issue, but I was too busy trying to keep the business in the black during the recession. She was getting more and more pills, with only the boys to keep her company.
When she had the overdose and I was halfway around the world in Tokyo pulling Steve out of a whorehouse, they blamed me.
Maybe they were right to blame you, I think.
Steve wasn't a bad guy, but you're evidence, I guess. Evidence that he led me around by the nose into things that eventually killed their mother.
His eyes plead with me for understanding, even forgiveness, but I'm not the one who can give him that.
When he got the letter from your mom, Steve changed. He was a new man overnight. I swear to you, he would have been the most attentive, doting father. He wanted kids, and was over the moon when he discovered you.
He would have started looking for you immediately, but he'd had this trip planned for a long time with Dinah.
It was hang gliding in a place that apparently doesn't allow it, but Steve managed to bribe some local officials to let them make a run. He was going to look for you the minute he came back.
Don't hate him.
I don't hate him. I don't even know him.
I trail off, because my thoughts are a jumbled mess. Somehow, in the royal boys' minds, their mother's death and Steve's involvement are all tangled up, and I'm a convenient and living target. There's nothing I can do that will change their opinion. I see that now. Still, I asked for the truth, and I won't blame Callum for this.
Thank you, I say in a wobbly voice. I appreciate you being straight with me. I could be completely virtuous, and they'd still hate me. I could be Abby-like, and
a thought pops into my mind, and out of my mouth before I can stop it. What was Maria like?
Sweet.
She was sweet, kind. Just a smidge over 5 feet, and the soul of an angel. He smiles, and in that instant, I know he loved Maria. I've seen that kind of true love glow only once before. In the eyes of my own mother, she didn't have all her shit together, but she loved me.
Maria inspired the same love in her sons. That Abby is her replica and the opposite of everything I'm made of shouldn't bother me, but it does, because as much as I hate admitting it, the truth is, I want Reed to feel that way about me.
Which is about the stupidest sentiment I have ever conjured up.
Chapter 19. Reed doesn't look at me the entire trip back to shore or when we arrive home. His brooding silence speaks loudly enough. He's furious and going to stay that way for a good long while. I beg off dinner citing sunstroke because there's no way I can endure an entire meal with Reed either ignoring I exist or needling me at every opportunity. I know I brought this on myself, but when even Easton scowls as I'm heading up to my room, I wonder if I made a mistake.
I thought you weren't gonna screw my dad, he hisses as I pass by him in the hall.
I didn't. I just wanted Reed to think I did. When Easton still looks doubtful, I let out a sigh. All Callum and I did was talk about Steve.
And your mom.
But I figure Easton wouldn't appreciate that in his current mood. He's not pacified one bit by my confession.
Don't play games with my brother.
You've got him worked up and now he's going to have to get it out of his system.
I blanch.
What do you mean?
I ask, but dread the answer. He's running to Abby. That makes me want to puke all over Easton's deck shoes.
Never mind.
He waves me off.
You two should either screw or stay away from each other. Staying away from each other is my vote.
Noted. I start to open my bedroom door, but Easton grabs my arm.
I'm serious. If you need someone, just come to me. I don't mind you so much.
Ugh. I'm done with these royal boys. Gosh, Easton, that's so generous. Does your pity sex offer have an expiration date, or is it a coupon I can use whenever I feel like it?
I stomp into my bedroom and slam the door in his confused face. It's early, but I decide to go to bed, because I have to be at the bakery before the sun rises, and then school, and there isn't a person in this house that I want to talk to right now. I crawl under the covers and force myself to fall asleep, but I drift in and out, rousing at every door slam and foot stomp outside my bedroom. In the late night hours, I hear furious whispering in the hall. The same furious whispering I heard the other night. Easton and Reed are arguing about something. I check the time. It's about the same time, too, just after midnight.
I'm going, Reed says flatly. Last time you were pissed I wouldn't let you come, and now you're whining when I invite you?
Oh, that's a guaranteed button pusher.
Hey, excuse me for worrying that your head's so far up your ass you won't see a fist coming. Easton snaps back.
Yep. Buttons pushed.
At least I'm not panting after Steve's daughter.
Yeah, right, Easton says derisively. Because that's why I found you nearly naked and tied to a chair, because you don't want Ella at all.
They move off far enough down the hall that I can't hear Reed's full response, but it sounds something like,
I'd rather bang Jordan than stick my dick in that trap.
My anger has me tossing the covers aside and shooting out of bed. Those two have secrets that they don't want me to know about? Well, if I'm in a war here at the royal house, I need all the ammunition I can get. I rush to the closet and throw on the first thing I touch, which turns out to be a miniskirt. Not the perfect creeper clothes, but I don't have time to waste. I jump into the skirt and pull on a t-shirt, then push my feet into my sneakers and creep out of my bedroom as quietly as possible. I tiptoe down the back stairs. There's no one in the kitchen, but I hear faint noises outside. A car door slams. Shit, I need to hurry. Luckily, the twins leave clothes, keys, wallets, and all kinds of junk down in the mudroom all the time. I race across the kitchen to the connected mudroom and grab the first hoodie I find. There are keys and a wad of cash in the front pocket. Perfect. Ducking down beneath the window in the door, I peek out and see the taillights of Reed's Range Rover blinking down the drive. I wrench open the door and haul ass to the garage. When the button on the key fob lights up the twins' SUV, I heave a sigh of relief and climb inside. It's tricky to secretly follow someone in a car on a dark night down a quiet street, but I manage to pull it off, because Reed doesn't stop or whip his vehicle around to angrily confront me. He leads me into the heart of the city, and then down several side roads until we arrive at a gate. Reed parks his SUV. I cut the engine and shut off the lights. In the moonlight, I can barely make out the two brothers as they get out of the Rover, and then clamber over the fence. What the heck am I getting into? Are they dealing drugs? That would be nuts. The family is loaded. The hoodie I'm wearing has $500 in 20s and 50s balled up. And I'd bet the entire wad that if I went through each one of the pockets of the jackets hanging in the mudroom, I'd find loads of cash in every one of them. So what could they be doing? I run over to the fence to check if I can see anything, but all I can make out is a row of long rectangular-shaped structures, all roughly the same size, but no Reed or Easton. Ignoring the inner voice that's telling me it's beyond stupid to climb a fence and rush into the dark, I do it anyway. When I get closer to the buildings, I realize that they aren't buildings at all, but shipping containers, which means I must be in a shipyard. My deck shoes are soft on the bottom and make no noise, so when I come upon Easton handing a stack of cash to some hoodie-clad stranger, neither of them hear me. I duck backward, using the container as a shield, while peeking around the corner like an inept spy in a terrible action movie. Beyond Easton and the stranger, there's a makeshift circle set in the center of an empty space at the end of four shipping crates. And inside that circle is Reed, stripped down to a pair of jeans. He pulls one arm across his body and then switches to stretch the other arm. Then he bounces on the balls of his feet, as if he's trying to loosen himself up. When I spot the other shirtless guy, all the pieces fall into place. The secret late-night trips out of the house, the unexplained bruises on his face. Easton must be betting on his brother. Hell, Easton might be fighting too, if I remember the argument between the two of them last week. I thought someone was following us, but Reed wouldn't listen. I jerk around to find Easton standing right behind me. Then I go on the defensive before he can give me shit about following them. What are you gonna do, tell on me? I mock. He rolls his eyes, then pulls me forward. Come on, you sneak. You're the cause of this. You might as well see it through. I let him drag me to the edge of the circle, but I do protest. I'm the cause of this? How do you figure? Easton pushes people aside and muscles us up to the front. Tying Reed to a chair buck-ass naked? He had underwear on, I mumble. Easton ignores me and keeps talking. Leaving him hornier than a sailor after a 9-month stint at the bottom of the ocean? Please, sis. He's got so much adrenaline in his body right now that it's either fight or... He looks down at me with speculation. Screw. And since you won't screw him, it's this. Hey, big bro, he calls out. Our baby sis came to watch. Reed spins around. What the hell are you doing here? I resist the urge to hide behind Easton's big frame. Just here to cheer on the family. Go, Royals, I start to say. But then wonder if these guys are using aliases or something. I lift my fist. Go, family. East, if you put her up to this, I swear I'm gonna beat your ass into next Sunday. Easton holds up his hands. Dude, I told you someone was following us. But you couldn't hear anything over all your bitching about how you were gonna teach someone. He tilts his head in my direction. A lesson. Reed scowls. He clearly wants to pick me up and throw me out into the dark. Before he can do anything, the other shirtless guy, with thighs like tree trunks, claps him on the shoulder. You done having your family reunion? I wanna get this fight over with before the sun rises. The anger in Reed's blue eyes dissolves into amusement. Cunningham, you won't last 5 seconds. Where's your bro? Cunningham shrugs his massive shoulders. He's getting his dick sucked by some casual. Now don't be scared, Royal. I won't hurt you too bad. I know you have to show your pretty face at Astor Park tomorrow. You stay here. Reed points at me and then at the ground. Move, and it'll be way worse for you.
Because it's been so good up until now, I crack.
Quit talking and start fighting, someone from the crowd yells. If I wanted to watch a soap opera, I would have stayed home.
Easton punches Reed hard in the shoulder, and Reed punches him right back. Both blows would have felled me, but the two laugh like maniacs. Cunningham backs up to the center and gestures for Reed to come after him. Reed doesn't hesitate. There's no dancing around, taking each other's measure. Reed launches himself at Cunningham, and for a good 5 minutes, the two exchange blows. I flinch at every contact Cunningham makes, but Easton just laughs and cheers Reed on.
Easiest money I ever make betting on Reed, he crows.
I fold my arms around my waist. Callum said he was in a dark place, but does he realize his sons are there too? That they come out here and take blow after blow to rid themselves of whatever emotions that haunt them? And what does it say about me, that my palms are dampening, and so are other parts of my body, that my breath is quickening and my heart is starting to race? I can't take my eyes off Reed. His muscles are gleaming in the moonlight, and he's so incredibly beautiful in this animalistic form, that something primal inside me responds in a way I don't know how to deal with.
Getting you hot, isn't it?
Easton whispers knowingly in my ear.
I shake my head no, but my entire body screams yes. And as Reed strikes his final blow, one that swings Cunningham all the way around and drops him face first to the concrete, I know that if he crooks his little finger at me, I won't be able to turn him away. Not this time. Chapter 20. I drive back to the mansion with Easton in the passenger side because Reed mutters that he doesn't trust me to get back on my own. I want to point out that I got to the shipyard fine all by my lonesome, but my mouth is cemented shut. Obviously, Reed isn't to be messed with tonight. He fought two more guys after Cunningham, and he kicked both their asses, too. Easton counted his winnings on the ride back, and they totaled up to $8,000. It seems like a drop in the bucket compared to how loaded they already are. But Easton informs me that money is always sweeter when you've bled for it. Reed didn't bleed, though. I don't think he'll even be bruised or sore tomorrow. That's how wild and powerful he'd been when he'd slammed his fists over and over again into those guys tonight. In the driveway, I kill the engine, but I stay in the car because Reed hasn't gotten out of his yet. Easton doesn't stick around. He just tucks his cash in his pocket and ducks out of the SUV, heading for the side door without a backward glance. It isn't until I see Reed slide out of the driver's seat that I do the same. We stand 10 feet apart, and our gazes lock. His hard eyes and tight jaw send a wave of exhaustion crashing over me. I'm so tired, and not because it's nearly 2 a.m. and I've been up since 7. I'm tired of the hatred that rolls off Reed's body every time he sees me. I'm tired of fighting with him. I'm tired of the games and the tension and the unending hostility. I take a step toward him. He turns his back to me and disappears around the side of the house. No, not this time. He can't run away from me. I won't let him. I hurry after him, grateful for the motion-activated lights that surround the house. They guide my way to the backyard and then beyond it, down the path, leading to the shore. Reed has a 20-foot head start and the advantage of having lived here all his life. With total ease, he navigates the rocks lining the beach until he reaches the water's edge. I'm still making my way through the boulder-strewn sand when I see him kick off his shoes and socks and wade into the water. He doesn't seem to care that the bottom of his jeans are getting soaked. It's late, but not pitch black. The moon is out, illuminating his gorgeous face. His shoulders are down, and he rakes both hands through his hair when I finally come up beside him.
Haven't we tortured each other enough today?
His voice comes out weary. I let out a heavy sigh. It has been a pretty eventful day, huh?
You tied me to a chair,
he mutters.
You deserved it.
We go quiet for a moment. I slip out of my shoes and take a step forward, then squeal when the freezing cold water soaks my feet. Reed grunts out a laugh. Is the Atlantic always this cold? I blurt out.
Yeah.
I stare at the water and listen to the waves crash against the shore. Then I sigh again. We can't keep doing this, Reed. He doesn't answer. I mean it. I latch my hand on his arm and twist him around to face me. His blue eyes are expressionless, which I guess is better than the usual dose of contempt. I don't want to fight anymore. I'm tired of fighting.
Then leave.
I already told you I'm here to stay. I'm here to go to school and graduate and then go to college.
So you say.
I let out an aggravated groan. You want me to say something else? Fine. I've got plenty to say. I'm not hooking up with your father, Reed, and I'm never going to because, one, that's gross, and two, that's gross. He's my guardian, and I appreciate everything he's done for me. That's it. That's all it'll ever be. Reed shoves his hands in his pockets and says nothing. All Callum and I did on the boat today was talk. He told me about my father, and honestly, I still don't know how I feel about all that. I never even met Steve, and from what I've heard about him, I don't know if I would have liked him. But I can't change the fact that he's my father, okay? And you can't keep holding it against me.
I didn't ask for Steve to knock up my mom, and I didn't ask your dad to barge into my life and bring me here.
He scoffs.
You're saying you'd prefer to still be taking your clothes off for money?
Right now?
Yeah, I say frankly. At least I knew what to expect from that life.
I knew who to trust and who to stay away from. And say what you want about stripping, but no one, not a single person, ever called me a slut or a whore the whole time I was working the clubs.
Reed rolls his eyes.
Because it's such a respectable profession.
It's a living, I shoot back. And when you're 15 and trying to pay your dying mother's medical bills, it's survival. You don't know me. You don't know anything about me, and you haven't even tried getting to know me, so you're not allowed to judge. You're not allowed to talk shit about something you have no clue about. His shoulders go rigid again. He takes another step forward, causing water to splash my bare ankles. You don't know me, I repeat. He tosses me a dark look.
I know enough.
I'm a virgin, did you know that? The words pop out before I can stop them, and he jerks in surprise. He recovers quickly, a cynical look playing across his face.
Sure, Ella, you're a virgin.
It's the truth. Embarrassment heats my cheeks, though I'm not sure what I'm embarrassed about. You can keep thinking I'm a slut, but you're wrong. My mom got sick when I was 15. When the hell did I have time to screw around with boys? He laughs harshly.
Next thing you're going to tell me, you've never kissed a guy, right?
No, I have. I've done some stuff. My cheeks are scorching now. But not the big stuff. Not the stuff you keep accusing me of.
Is this the part where you ask me to make a woman of you?
My skin prickles with insult. You're a real asshole sometimes, you know that? He frowns. I'm only telling you this because I want you to realize how unfair you're being, I whisper. I get it. You've got issues. You hate your dad, and you miss your mom. And you like to beat people up for shits and giggles. You're messed up in the head. That much is obvious. I don't expect us to be friends, okay? I don't expect anything from you, actually. But I want you to know that I'm done with this feud we've got going. I'm sorry about the way I acted earlier. I'm sorry I tied you to a chair and let you think there was something between me and Callum. But as of this moment, I'm done fighting. Say whatever you want to me. Think whatever you want about me. Keep acting like a jerk. I don't care. I'm not playing the game anymore. I'm done. When he stays silent, I wade out of the water and make my way back to the house. I've said my piece and I meant every word. Seeing Reed beat the crap out of someone tonight really put everything in perspective for me. The Royal Brothers are even more screwed up than I am. They're hurting and they're lashing out, and I'm the most convenient target. But fighting back only makes it worse. It only fuels their anger toward me. I refuse to engage anymore.
Ella,
Reed's voice stops me as I reach the upper deck. I halt near the pool and swallow hard when I glimpse the remorse in his eyes. He reaches me, his voice thick with gravel, as he says, I. A loud voice slurs from behind us.
What are you kids doing out here so late?
I smother my irritation as Brooke appears at the patio doors. She's in a white silk robe, with her blonde hair flowing over one shoulder. In her right hand, she's clutching a bottle of red wine. I notice that Reed cringes at the sound of her voice, but when he speaks, he sounds cold and indifferent.
We're in the middle of something. Go to bed.
You know I can't sleep without your dad cuddled up beside me.
Brooke manages to make it down the steps without tripping. She comes up to us, and I sigh when I glimpse her alcohol-glazed eyes. Callum is a pro when it comes to drinking, but this is the first time I've seen Brooke drunk. Where's Callum? I reach a hand out to steady her.
He went to the office, she whines. On Sunday night. He said there was an emergency he had to handle.
I can't help but feel a pang of sympathy. It's so obvious that Callum is not at all invested in his relationship with Brooke, and equally obvious that she wants so badly for him to love her. I feel bad for her.
I didn't realize banging your secretary was considered an emergency, Reed says mockingly.
her eyes laser toward Reed. I take a protective step toward him. Let me take you inside, I tell Brooke. To the living room. I'll get you a blanket, and... She jerks out of my grip.
Are you the lady of the house now?
Her voice is reaching shrilly levels.
Because you're a fool if you think that you'll be anything to these royals. And you...
She turns with a wild light in her eyes toward Reed.
You'd better stop talking to me like that.
The retort that I was sure Reed would spit back never comes. I cast a questioning glance toward him, but he's gone. His expression is closed down, almost vacant.
I'm going to be your mother someday. You should learn to be nicer to me.
Brooke takes an unsteady step forward and strokes her manicured nails down his cheek. He flinches and then pries Brooke's hand off him.
I'll be dead first.
He shoves past her and heads for the French doors. I hurry after him, leaving Callum's girlfriend on the patio. This time I'm the one calling after him. Reed! He stops in front of the stairs in the kitchen.
What?
What were you going to say before Brooke interrupted us? His head turns. Blue eyes, hard with malice, peer back at me.
Nothing,
he mutters.
Absolutely nothing.
Behind me, I hear a crash. I want nothing more than to chase after Reed, but Brooke can't be left alone, drunk by the pool. I hurry back to her side, where I find her staggering precariously close to the edge of the water. Come on, Brooke. I tug on her arm. This time she follows docilely, leaning her slight weight against me.
They're all terrible, she weeps. You need to stay away from them, just to protect yourself.
It's going to be okay. Do you want to go upstairs, or is the living room all right?
With the ghost of Maria staring at me?
Brooke shudders.
She's here. Always here. When I'm in charge, we're moving. We're raising this house to the ground and eradicating Maria.
That sounds unlikely. I lead her, half carrying, half dragging her into the living room. Where, yep, there's a portrait of Maria over the fireplace. Brooke holds her fingers up in the sign of the cross as we pass in front of it. I have to swallow a laugh at the ridiculousness of this. The living room is actually a long room that runs along the front of the house. There are two seating areas, so I pull Brooke to the second set, that is closer to the window and farther away from the portrait of Maria. She gratefully sinks onto the sofa, bending her knees and tucking her hands under her cheek. Her tears have smeared her makeup, and she looks like a tragic doll, like one of the strippers who's so sure that the rich man who gives her the $100 tip is going to return and sweep her away. Of course he doesn't. He's just using her. Brooke, if being with Callum hurts you like this, why do you stay? Do you really think there's any man out there who won't hurt you? That's what men do, Ella. They hurt you. Her hand shoots out to grip my wrist. You should get away from here. These royals will ruin you. Maybe I want to be ruined, I say lightly. She lets me go, pulling her hand back, retreating inside herself. No one wants to be ruined. We all want to be saved. There has to be at least one decent guy out there. That makes her laugh, hysterically, and the laughter just keeps going and going. I leave her to it, heading upstairs with the sound of her giggles tickling my back. This woman who honestly doesn't believe she can find a man who doesn't hurt her. Why that conviction feels like she scraped a knife down my spine, I don't know. Chapter 21 Reed doesn't drive me to work the next morning. He's already left for football practice when I step out of the house, and I'm not surprised. I'm pretty sure that the last thing he expected to get from me last night was a truce offering. Which means he's probably on his way to school right now, obsessing about whether or not my apology was just another trick. It wasn't, though. I'm sticking to the decision I made yesterday. I'm done antagonizing the royals. I take the bus to the bakery and work alongside Lucy for the next 3 hours. Then walk over to school and duck into the bathroom to change into my uniform.
When I exit the ladies' room, I bump into the girl Easton was supposedly dating before. Claire, I think. The second she sees me, her mouth pinches in a tight line. Then she brushes past me, leaving one hiss of a word in her wake. Slut. That single syllable is like a fist to the stomach. I falter, wondering if I'd misheard her. But as I walk down the hall, and every junior girl I pass glowers at me, I realize something's up. From the guys, I get grins and smirks. It's painfully obvious that for some reason, I'm a hot topic today. It isn't until Valerie finds me at my locker that I'm brought into the loop. "Why didn't you tell me you made out with Easton Royal?" she demands in a hushed voice. My calculus book almost slips from my fingers. Wait, this is about Easton? But we were in my bedroom when we kissed. And there's no way Reed would have blabbed about that. So how the heck does everyone know? The club. Crap. The memory whizzes into my head at the same time Valerie starts to laugh. I knew I should have kept a closer eye on you that night, she teases. But we weren't even drinking. That means you made out with him sober. Do I need to hold an intervention for you? I sigh. Maybe. The girls Val had introduced me to at Jordan's party, the pastels, she'd called them, walk by. All three of them turn to look at me and whisper amongst themselves. It was a stupid move, I admit. I didn't really think it through. No, all I was thinking about that night was Reed and the way he looked at me when I was in the cage. Does everybody know, then? She grins. Oh, they know. It's all anyone's been talking about this morning, and the first bell hasn't even gone off. Claire is pissed? I bet she is. And if Claire's mad, I can only imagine what Jordan will have to say about it. A casual like me, putting my grubby hands all over one of her precious royals? She's probably freaking out right now. What about you? I ask the only person who matters. Are you pissed? Valerie snickers. Because you stuck your tongue down Easton's throat? Why would I care about that? It's the answer I'd hoped for, and I cling to it as we part ways in the hallway and go off to our morning classes. It doesn't matter that everyone is whispering, or that chicks glare daggers at me whenever I enter a classroom. Valerie's opinion is the only one that matters to me. Still, by the time lunch rolls around, I'm ready to pull my hair out. Every girl that passes me in the hall looks ready to murder me. Easton makes it worse by going out of his way to pay a visit to my locker and give me a prolonged full-body hug. He pretends not to notice all the stares we're getting, but I'm excruciatingly aware of them. You're Ella, right? I've just shoved my textbooks in my locker when a guy with spiky blonde hair and a striped rugby shirt approaches. His question is ridiculous, because he damn well knows who I am. These kids have all gone to school together since kindergarten, probably, and there isn't a single soul at Astor Park Prep who doesn't know about the new Royal. Yeah. I paced on an indifferent look. And you are? Daniel Delacourt. He sticks out his hand, then awkwardly lowers it to his side when I don't shake it. I've wanted to introduce myself for a while, but... He shrugs. I roll my eyes. But it was against Reed's rules. He nods sheepishly. God, these people are the worst. So why are you introducing yourself now? That earns me another shrug. A couple friends of mine were at the club on Saturday night. They said they saw you with Easton. So? I anticipate some kind of insult, but don't get one. So the rules have changed. Nobody was allowed to ask you out before because of Reed. But you were with Easton the other night, so things are different now. Wait, he's asking me out? I narrow my eyes at him. What, you're not going to call me a slut for making out with Easton at a club? His lips twitch with humor. If I called every girl who's made out with Easton a slut, there'd be no one left in the school. I can't help but laugh. I'm serious, Daniel insists. Drunken makeouts with Easton Royal are like a rite of passage at Astor Park. Are you speaking from personal experience? I ask politely. He flashes a grin. The guy's cute, I'll give him that. Luckily, no. Anyway, I just came over to ask if you wanted to go out for dinner sometime. A jolt of suspicion travels through me.
and Daniel must sense it because he quickly says, "It doesn't have to be a date. We could make it a friend thing if that makes you more comfortable. I just want to get to know the girl who's got all the royal panties in a twist." I'm still hesitating, so he lets out a hasty breath. "Can I see your phone?" Although I'm not sure why, I stick my hand in my back pocket and pull out my phone, passing it over to him. His fingers move briskly over the touchpad. "There, you've got my number now. So how about this? Think it over, and if you decide you want to do dinner, shoot me a text."
Okay. Sure.
Daniel smiles again and gives me a little salute before striding off. I watch him go, my gaze focusing on his cute butt. He's got the toned body of an athlete, and I suddenly wonder if he's on the football team. I hope not, because that means Reed will probably hear about Daniel asking me out when they're at their afternoon practice. But I underestimated the grapevine at this school. The news of Daniel's invitation comes out literally 5 minutes after he issued it. I'm two steps from the cafeteria when I get a text message from Valerie. "Daniel Delacorte asked you out?" I respond with, "Yeah."
"Did you say yes?"
I said I'd think about it.
"Don't think too hard. He's one of the nicer ones."
Another text quickly pops up. "Captain of the lacrosse team." She adds this as if that makes a difference to me. Rolling my eyes, I enter the cafeteria and track Val down at our usual table in the corner. She grins the moment she sees me, tucks her phone away, and says,
"Okay, tell me everything.
Did he get down on one knee? Did he give you flowers?" For the next hour, she barrages me with questions about a guy I only spoke to for 2 minutes. Truthfully, it's a nice distraction from this morning's whisper fest, and it stops me from obsessing over what Reed will have to say when he finds out. Chapter 22. I don't see Reed until after school, and when I do, he's not racing over to demand that I stay away from Daniel. Instead, he's bracing himself against the driver's side door talking to Abby, and the soft blonde is leaning against Reed's Rover with one hand on his hip. The whole scene makes me want to gag.
"They look cozy."
I turn to see Savannah next to me. We haven't spoken at all since the day she gave me a tour of the campus, so I'm surprised to find her there.
"I guess. Heard Daniel Delacorte asked you out today."
She smooths a hand over her stick-straight hair. "Apparently it's a slow news day at school," I joke. "But, yes, don't do it," she says abruptly. "You'll regret it if you do." After dropping that bomb, she steps off the curb and hurries to her car, leaving me open-mouthed and confused. Before I can make sense of the warning, a low-slung convertible sports car moves into my line of vision. Daniel smiles up at me from the driver's seat. "Nice car." I peer at the interior. It's black and full of shiny dials. "Sounds like a beast."
"Thanks. Gift from the parents when I was 16. I was a little concerned when I heard it had 400 horsepower. I wondered if my dad thought I needed to overcompensate for something."
I grin. That he has the ability to make a joke about himself makes me warm up to him.
"And do you?"
"Ella," he asks jokingly.
"You're supposed to reassure me that I have nothing to worry about in the man department."
"How would I know?" I tease.
"He is a secret."
He leans across the console and gestures for me to come closer. "We males have very fragile egos. It's best to always compliment us so that we don't turn into psychopaths."
"You have nothing to worry about in the man department," I dutifully reply.
"That's my girl."
He nods in approval. "Want to ride home?" I straighten and scan the lot for Easton, the twins, or even Durand. But it's empty of royals, except for Reed, who doesn't see me. His attention is on the angelic fairy girl who reminds him of his mother. Daniel tracks my eyes straight to the couple.
"Abby and Reed," he muses. "That's a couple destined to be together."
"Why do you say that?" I sound annoyed, and I am, but I wish I hid it better.
"Reed's picky, not like Easton. I've seen him with one girl the last 2 years. I think she's it for him."
"So, why aren't they together?"
We both watch as Reed's head dips close to Abby's, as if they're about to kiss.
Who says they're not?
Daniel's observations are careless,